From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 19th day of November, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Gavin McGuire of E. Hedger. Paul Cooley is away today. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain markets with Matt Blaisdell of the Andersons Climbers Facility in Delphi, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, U.S. EPA has raised the rate at which ethanol must be blended into the fuel supply. FTAs with nations around the planet are on hold, waiting for the president-elect to take office. And the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture is confident ag input cost will come down. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with these and many more ag news stories, and then I'll take you to a niche market farm in the east central part of Illinois. Oh, and don't forget that in this half hour, we'll talk with Drew Lerner, World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. He'll help us take a complete look at today's agricultural weather forecast. It all happens on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Mark Report is a production of WILL Public Radio from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago, on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby December wheat at $5.27 on its settlement price today, 2¾ cents lower. The March down 3 at 546½, and the May wheat at 560½ settled 3½ cents lower. December wheat in Kansas City for the hard red at $5.59½, a penny and a half lower on the day. December corn futures in Chicago today settled nearby at 378¾, down 1¼. March at 395¼, a penny and a quarter lower. In the May, corn futures at 406½, down 1¼. July, 417¼, down 1¾. December for next year, down 2 cents at 441½. Soy complex now, January beans down a nickel at 897. The March at 904¼, down 6 cents for the day. May futures 913, down 7¾. July at 922½, 7¼ lower. And November soybeans for next year, 11 cents lower at $9.15. The products from the beans, December bean meal at 267. 70, 30 cents higher. December bean oil at 31.97, down 31 cents. December live cattle futures today at $84.20, down 2.95. The NOVE feeders at 95.57½, 17½ lower. And the December lean hogs at 55.92½, up 47½ cents. Here's what the outside markets look like on the hour. December crude oil futures at 53.76 are down 63 cents at this hour. December ethanol at $1.68.7, just about unchanged. Natural gas at $6.73.8, up 22¢. And the December RBOB at $1.10.7, 2¢ lower. Heating oil, that's diesel fuel, at $1.76.5, unchanged on the day, actually just about 7¢ higher. December propane futures at $74.5 are up 1¢. And the gold futures are trading the November at $735.90 an ounce, up $3.30 for the afternoon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average trading at 82.56 is just 166 points lower. And the U.S. dollar is trading at 87.47. That's just about unchanged on the day. The CRB index at 239.98. is down 2.37 for the day. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like. A lake effect snow watch is in effect for LaPorte, St. Joe, and Elkhart counties in north-central parts of Indiana. That from Thursday morning through Friday evening. And the lake effect snow advisory is in effect for Porter County in northwestern parts of Indiana from Thursday morning through Friday morning. Here's what the forecast from our own meteorologist Ed Kieser looks like. He says tonight in northern Indiana, mostly cloudy skies, scattered showers and flurries. Elsewhere, partly to mostly cloudy. Lows will range this evening from 22, says Ed, in the northwestern part of Illinois, to 30 in the far south. Tomorrow, Ed says, in northern Indiana, cloudy, snow showers, a few snow squalls. Elsewhere, mostly cloudy, scattered flurries, primarily in northern and central sections. Highs will range tomorrow from 31 in far northwestern parts of Illinois to 40 in the far south.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Wednesday afternoon. Normally at this time, we talk to Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. He's not available, but I do have something of a special interview that we did last week with Gavin McGuire. He's a director of eHedger in Chicago, Illinois, and was at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention. We start out this interview by asking Gavin just exactly what eHedger is and who they service.
We have several hundred farmers, as well as maybe nearly 1,000 speculative customers who trade futures and options in the commodity space.
You want to talk about the spec guys or the farmer guys or both?
Both. Unfortunately, they're the yin and yang of the market these days, so you can't really separate them up into distinct portions. The influence of one has an impact on the other, and That's been the story of 2008 so far. I think the run-up in prices was a combination of both fundamental strength and speculative interest in the commodity space. And now, as the speculators all stampede towards the exits, they're dragging the price down. And obviously, that's hurting many of the producers, but obviously helping some of the consumers. So,
are you sure that when the spec money gets out, when the speculative money, the index funds get out, that it is actually dragging down the marketplace? There are some studies from the University of Illinois that suggest that that's not the case, that it's really commercial interest and farmer interest, those that are hedgers that set a price, and the spec money is more the liquidity because they come in with so many dollars, but they're buying at prices, and they're not driving prices.
Well, we've seen some influence being wielded by the spec community. Now, there is a difference between the index guys who are long-only participants and fairly docile participants in the market, and between those guys and managed futures funds and hedge funds. They tend to be more aggressive, and they certainly do have an impact on the price. They are highly leveraged. They've got a huge exposure in the commodities arena, and they tend to, when they short a position, for instance, they tend to be very aggressive about when they do it so as to have maximum impact on the price. And so I can appreciate long-term, maybe it's the real supply and demand that is the long-term determinant of each of the grain prices, but over the short term, it can't be denied that a speculative exodus has impacted the price of several different commodities. We haven't seen real demand choke up to the degree that would warrant a 50% retracement of the price of corn. We have seen speculative money, though, go from in the several billions down to single-digit billions or under a billion now. So as that money pours out, it is having a short-term impact on the price.
Well, but weren't those same specs, and let's just say that the index funds were buyers, and since they're docile, that they have less of an impact on the price. But that managed speculative money, that proactively managed, that they're on the buy and the sell side, would they not have been doing the same sort of thing on the way up too? And so trying to suggest that corn at $7 fundamentally was correct might not be correct either?
Absolutely. They added a severe upward thrust to the market on the way up, and we overdid it to the upside, and now we're going to overdo it to the downside. And consumers, producers, and speculators all share the blame and glory on both those fronts. I think sentiment starts to feed on itself in both directions, and on the way up at $6.50, we were only looking higher. Nobody took a breath. Everybody agreed that things were perfectly aligned for $10 corn. And before we knew it, everybody had bought, including all of the speculators, and we're all sitting there with tons of grain on the long side of the market. Clearly, that's the recipe for a downturn. Now people are getting short, sentiment is bearish, and those are the kind of ingredients to determine whether or not we've hit a bottom. We think we're probably close to putting in a bottom for the corn price right now, and that we will start to see an alignment in terms of purchasing from real consumers and a rebuild on the long side of speculative interest. And that will help push the market off its lows and towards higher prices as 2009 unfolds.
So let's take this the same direction, but break it up into a couple of places. And I know it's not quite this way, but let's say that the spec money drives things both too far up, too far down, and then your job is to figure out where fundamentally the marketplace should be trading and what kinds of range. Can you give me those ranges for corn and soybeans, wheat, if you'd like?
I could try. I think corn is going to have a year of two halves going forward. The next 6 months, I think it's going to have a hard time putting any sustained rallies in, because not only does it have to contend with a softer feed demand area as well as a lessened appetite from ethanol, but also in Europe in particular has to contend with stiff competition from feed wheat. We grew too much wheat in the world over the past few months, and that is going to displace corn for the next 3 to 4 months. And so corn is going to have a solid base underneath it, but it's going to have trouble pushing higher. And so we could probably see a narrow sideways band, probably with a lid on corn prices, new crop corn prices, at about $5 or so, maybe $5.50. So any rallies are going to be snuffed out. Also, you have to look at the producer side of the equation. The farmer here in the U.S. has done an incredible job in getting out of the problems that it had in Iowa in July with the floods. The national farmer has produced a crop, to be honest. We've been very impressed, and we're delighted for them, and they're going to sell that. And so they need to sell it. That's the way that they produce their revenue. And so any bouts of corn price strength will be sold into by both the farmer, and again, it'll be undercut by wheat competition. Once, though, we chew through the excess wheat inventories, then corn will be ready to stage an advance. So we think it'll probably get above $6 again sometime in 2009, probably if there is any problems with soybean production. Soybeans and corn are competing for the same acres at the same time. And right now there are many things to suggest that soybeans may have the upper hand in terms of at least holding on to its acres right now and maybe even gaining some. The beans have got lower inventories both in the U.S. and globally, and consumer demand for the soybean market remains very strong, particularly in Asia. However, the big factor here is South America. Can they produce a big crop or not? Certainly, they have the capability, but they've been impacted by tightening credit markets, by high fertilizer prices, by political turmoil in Argentina. So there's a lot of factors in the air there that suggest that we cannot be certain about what we can expect out of Argentina and Brazil. So they're the markets to watch. They have their growing season just ahead of us. If they have a problem down there in terms of the weather, soybean prices in the U.S. are going to go higher, and they're going to demand that the U.S. farmer follows that price signal and plants more. If South America produces a great crop, then we're going to see the pressure evenly distributed between spring wheat, corn, and soybeans, and the U.S. farmer can pick and choose between which one he fits in best. But years of good yields from the corn front have mean it's been an economical crop. U.S. farmer is getting very good at growing it. We're probably going to see corn hold on to good acres, but we don't know whether it's going to gain two or lose two until we see how the South American soybean harvest goes.
That's Gavin McGuire of eHedger out of Chicago, Illinois. I spoke with him last Thursday at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention. You can hear him again if you'd like on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Dave Dickey will be here in a moment with all the agricultural news for the day.
The closing market report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to cooley at admworld.com.
In agricultural news, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency set the amount of ethanol that must be blended into gasoline next year at 10.21%, an amount that brings the nation closer to maximum levels deemed acceptable by U.S. carmakers. The EPA raised the rate from 7.76% to comply with a 2007 law that mandated more renewable fuel be added to the fuel supply. Free trade agreements with Colombia, Panama, and South Korea negotiated by the Bush administration will likely be put on hold until 2009. House Democrats blocked action earlier this year on the U.S.-Colombia free trade deal after President George Bush tried to force a vote on the issue. President-elect Barack Obama and other Democrats say Colombia must do more to reduce violence against trade unionists. Obama also has called for the South Korea trade deal to be renegotiated because he says the agreement's auto provisions favor South Korean automakers too much. USDA Secretary Ed Schaefer says that he remains confident that input costs will decline before growers plant their 2009 crops. Schaefer says, quote, "We're hoping to see come planting time season next spring that the input would have come down commensurably with the energy costs. Things are starting to move in the right direction." An annual quality survey funded by the American Soybean Association and the U.S. Soybean Export Council indicates that the 2008 U.S. soybean crop carries the lowest protein level on record. Average U.S. soybean protein concentration was 1.2 percentage points lower in 2008 at 34%, and average oil was 6/10 of a percentage point higher at 19.2% when compared with 2007. European Union farm ministers fell short of a consensus agreement today to allow imports of a genetically modified soybean developed by Monsanto, paving the way for default approval. The application will now return to the European Commission, the European Union's executive arm, and most likely will receive a default 10-year approval in the coming weeks. And Sov Econ says Russia's 2008 grain crop is likely to reach 106 million to 107 million tons, up from an earlier forecast of 101 million to 105 million tons. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of this program, The Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. You can find them both on our website at willag.org. Up next, you know, if you're looking for a place to purchase an organically grown turkey for Thanksgiving or would simply prefer to buy grass-fed meats, there may still be time to find both online and in the Midwest. I'll have more on one possible solution. Mint Creek Farm is owned and operated by Harry and Gwen Carr, with the help of their children. The Carrs started with 50 acres in 1992 and have grown to 220 acres. There are turkeys on the farm, and they're raised organically. The sheep are grass-fed and were originally part of the Carr's plan to enliven and enrich the soil.
Actually, I think, I think of myself as a grass farmer. And when you're raising grass, it's relatively easy to be organic. It's much easier to be an organic grass farmer than it is to be an organic crop farmer. And the advantage of being a grass farmer is you basically working with a perennial agriculture that you don't have to till up and replant each year.
The grasses help rebuild the prairie soils at the Mint Creek Farm in Stell, Illinois. Harry Carr learned to plant mixes of legumes and grasses suited to the different conditions of the farm through trial and error and by talking to area farmers. Soil tests showed great improvement in soil fertility and texture after having the sheep rotationally graze in a particular area. And just like he cuts his pastures up into small plots to maximize production as the animals rotate through them, Carr has cut a niche market to sell the meat from his farm, too.
Well, that's a whole other benefit. As I see it, it's actually the cost-benefit ratio is way in the favor of grass farming than what it is crop farming.
There are two primary benefits here. We'll stay on the farm for the moment. Carr believes his farming practices are better for the soils than those of the row crop farmers around him. Given that, he's not raising row crops or competing with them in the commodity markets. The Carr family is, however, niche marketing organically and grass-fed meats. There are freezers full of turkeys ready to be shipped for Thanksgiving and a very nice website marketing the grass-fed lamb. You can see it all at mintcreekfarm.com. Harry Carr is very involved with the sustainable ag programs at the University of Illinois, too. There are programs there on and off campus to help those wanting to move into this type of market. And they can learn how to rotational graze or set up a business plan or find a niche market of their own. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Wednesday afternoon. Time to check in on the activity in the cash grain market. On the line with us from the Climbers facility that belongs to the Andersons in Delphi, Indiana, is Matt Blaisdell. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
How are we doing?
Oh, very well. You know, that Wurlitzer always takes me back to my young youth and old chicken dinners at homecoming in Elkhart, Illinois, and, well, a little bit nostalgic, I suppose. But I'll bet farmers are not nostalgic for prices at those times, and we're a little better than that today. But how is the basis holding up today?
Basis here in Clymer still improving. The local market area is still going north and to the east because of the poor crops in those areas, moving up over a nickel within the past 2 days on nearby basis and December and January basis. Outside markets still feeling a lot of pressure. Pressure in our markets down. A lot of guys coming to the realization that the $5 corn may not be there anymore.
Not there at this point, but are you hopeful? Well, depending on which side of the market you're on, but do you think that it will return?
You know, I do think some point of a rally will happen in March. I don't believe it's going to happen until we get through this financial mess that we're in right now. A lot of guys were hoping for it a little bit earlier. A lot of the guys in December are really hunting for that $4 mark and then looking out into the summer hoping for $4.75. Looking more of that $4.50, $4.75 break even point with all the input costs right now.
How far out do you tend to purchase at this point, and how difficult is it for an ethanol producer to think about buying corn or an end user like yourselves to buy corn or soybeans, either one, given the nature of the economy, and how scared are you that things could go against you?
I mean, there's always that consideration. We do have a good risk management department at our corporate office that offsets our buys. We back-to-back it with the ethanol so that that risk is minimalized almost immediately. We are still buying out in the 2010 crop year right now. Not seeing a whole lot just because a lot of guys are still nervous. They don't know what the market's going to do. They don't know what their inputs are going to be. But we are still offering that out there. Still doing a lot of next year's crop, too.
And your bids for the day?
Bids for the day here at Clymers. November at option, going to be $3.79. December at $3.82. January at $3.83. And next year, October and November, at $4.06.
Thanks much, Matt.
No problem.
And Matt joins us from the Clymers facility that belongs to the Andersons in Delphi, Indiana. In 2 minutes, we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. He'll help us take a complete look at today's agricultural weather forecast.
It's National Carbonated Beverage with Caffeine Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1861, the first export shipment of crude oil from the U.S. to Europe left from Philadelphia. A cargo of more than 1,300 barrels of crude arrived 7 weeks later in London. The crew of the Elizabeth Watts was shanghaied because recruiting a crew transporting oil was impossible. In 1883, William Simons died, a German-born English engineer and inventor. He was a pioneer in undersea cable and the steel industry. he developed a regenerative system using waste gases to preheat fuel gases, key in the open heath furnace used to purify steel. In 1918, Charles Richard Van Hise died, a U.S. geologist. He regarded soil conservation as crucial to the well-being of the nation. In his work, The Future of Man in America, he wrote, "We should work with the agents of the earth rather than reverse their work, as we have been doing since American settlement began." And in 1998, Ted Fujita died, a Japanese-American meteorologist. He was known as Mr. Tornado for his research into severe storms. He developed a scale for measuring tornadoes on the basis of their damage, and he was the first to verify downbursts and microbursts and their impact on airplanes. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It's a Wednesday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now to take a look at the agricultural weather is Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, a little respite here in the Midwest. A bit warmer today than it has been, but appears we're not going to stay warm for very long.
That's right. We do have another cold front that's coming southward, actually, at this very moment. It's moving southward through the upper parts of the Midwest and will pass through the heart of the region. As we go through the night tonight and tomorrow, the winds will shift around to the north. They'll become rather gusty. Probably see some speeds getting up to around 30 or 35 miles per hour. And that'll be ushering in some colder air, and temperatures will not recover again as nicely as they are out there right now for a while. I think we'll be pretty chilly. May warm up real briefly, perhaps as we go into the Saturday-Sunday time frame, but yet another cold surge will be coming southward from Canada after that. This will occur probably on Tuesday, late Monday or Tuesday of next week, and again, we'll see it racing through the region with some more wind and a little bit of snow flurry activity, some snow showers that might have a little more meat to them over the Great Lakes region. But the bottom line is that, this is as good as it's going to get out there today, and it's kind of downhill after that. We fortunately don't have a lot of big storms coming up, though.
Yeah, dry weather will be needed in a large part of the Midwest, at least the northwestern part, parts of Missouri. Still a lot of harvest to come.
That's right, and right now it does not look like we have to worry too much about big storms, but there are these brief moments of cooler air that come with a light dusting of snowfall, which shouldn't have a big impact on the majority of the harvest. I don't see a larger storm system coming on until we get perhaps out to the latter part of next week, or more likely in the following weekend, when a storm will come across the southern plains and try to work its way east-northeastward through the heart of the Midwest. That storm system will be very interesting because it will bring in some abundant moisture into the region and then will be followed by some very cold air again, and we'll end up with perhaps some snow that will accumulate this time around across a fair amount of the Midwest. Although that's a long way out in the forecast, that's the direction we're headed.
Sure seems like a long time since we've had the talk about harvesting around Thanksgiving here in the United States. Usually by this time, we're mostly concentrated on the growing conditions in South America. That crop is up and running. Tell me about it.
It's actually doing extremely well in Brazil. The field work has advanced pretty far ahead of itself. In some areas, we do have some recovering, let's put it this way, we're seeing some improvement occurring in southern Brazil where it had been too wet. They were having some planting delays earlier on, but that is reversing itself now, and just the opposite was occurring in northeastern parts of Brazil with too little precipitation for a while. Now that's changing, and it's raining fairly often up there. So the bottom line is Brazil is going to get most of their crop in the ground pretty quickly here, and it's going to be well-established and off to a very good start. Argentina is having a little more difficulty getting enough rain to fall in order to support their planting and early season crop development in unirrigated areas, and that's going to be an ongoing process for a while. I don't see a major rain event coming up for at least a week. But in the latter days of November, early December, we might do a little bit better in Argentina and get a good rain event to take place. I still think that the rest of spring and early summer will still be carrying a below-average precipitation bias in Argentina, which will warrant a close watch as we go forward.
Drew, thanks much.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is the senior agricultural meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and that is today's edition, a Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. You have a good afternoon, and stay safe, stay warm. I'm Todd Gleason.